The following message is brought to you by Terry Moore. And now, Mr. Moore.
You know, there was a man who lived alone, who believed he had great faith. And one day it began to rain, and it rained and rained and rained. And soon the waters and the creeks and the streams began to rise. And before you know it, the gentleman had water coming into his house, began coming underneath the door. Inches turned into several inches of water in the home, and then it turned into feet. And the gentleman thought, well, I better get to safety, so he climbed upon the roof of his house. And while he was on the roof of his house, he began to pray to God and ask for God to deliver his life. As he prayed, the water continued to rise. Soon it was up to the windowsills. And then a boat came along, and there was a man in the boat with his dog, and the man yelled to the gentleman on the roof and said, come down, swim over to me, you can come with me, we'll go to safety. And the man said, no, I'm waiting for God to deliver me. As the water continued to rise and approached the rooftop, another boat came along with a gentleman and a few children and said, jump down here, swim over and hop in the boat. We're going to go to safer ground. And the man said, no, I have great faith. My God will deliver me. The water continued to get higher and higher. Soon the man was almost submerged in it, and a helicopter came. And the helicopter dropped a ladder down to the gentleman and said, climb the ladder, come up, we'll take you to safety. And the man said, no, I'm prayed to God, he will deliver me. Well, you know what happened? The man drowned, and he died. And then the resurrection came, and this is a fictional story, of course, and he went to God and said, God, I prayed to you in great faith for you to deliver me, to save my life. Why didn't you hear me? And God said to the man, I sent you two boats and a helicopter. Why didn't you listen to me? Let's turn over to Exodus in chapter 19. You know, the most important of Christian disciplines is that of obedience. To be compliant is a fundamental skill that you and I must master if we hope to obtain the kingdom of God. Ironically, obedience is also the most difficult of traits for us to handle. Now, the evidence of man's lack of desire to obey God goes way back to the beginning, to the two trees in the Garden of Eden, and there Adam and Eve were instructed as to what they were and were not to do. And they failed, as we know, and they were forced to suffer the consequences. And as man continued to struggle to obey God, a handful of faithful men and women also struggled with the pride of life and the lust of the eyes, the lust of the flesh. But they overcame, and they were successful in their obedience to God. And then God came to make a covenant with his chosen people, those of Israel. In verse 5 of chapter 19, he says to them, now therefore, if you will obey my voice and keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine, and you shall become or be a kingdom of priests and a holy nation. These are the words which you shall tell Israel. So initially, the people of Israel obeyed God. Well, there were, of course, we know, some problems. They had some incidents of betrayal, but overall, Israel eventually came to fear God. They understood that obedience to his words was not submission to somebody that was on a power trip. They came to understand that it was for their own good, so that they would become a prosperous nation on the earth. And so this is the same lesson that you and I are learning today. To obey the words of our Creator is actually for our own benefit. We know this. His instructions were not designed to torment us. They were given for our advantage. They were given to us so that our life would have meaning, so that we would understand our relationship to the earth, to God, our relationship to the future of the universe. They were given to us so that we could have a better perspective of what the meaning of life is and our part to play in it. Well, what do we do with the instructions given to us, with the laws, the judgments, the examples, the teachings? What do we do with these? What about the rules of the city that we live in? What about the rules of the state that we live in the country? How about those rules that we are supposed to follow in the workplace, in public institutions of education? What do we do with those? What about the instructions that are given to us by the church? How do we handle those? Are we obedient to those as well? Does our obedience in all of these other things reflect our submission to God? Let's turn over to Romans, which you're probably guessing I'm going already. Romans in chapter 13. There were two men that was strolling down a busy street one day. One of them was an entomologist, which is a bug scientist, basically, in layman's terms. And another was just a friend of his. And as they walked, the entomologist stopped and said, "Listen, can you hear that?" And the friend said, I don't know what you're referring to. All I hear is the sound of traffic and the people on the busy street." "Yes," said the scientist, "I hear that. But can you hear the cricket?" He walked over to a tall office building, and on a stone pathway, he turned over one of the stones, and out jumps this cricket that was making it shrill. As they continued to walk along, the friend asked, "How on earth could you hear the cricket above all of that noise?" And to show how easy it was, the scientist took out a 20-cent piece. Obviously, this was a long time ago. They don't have 20-cent pieces anymore. But he took out a 20-cent piece, and in a crowd of people, he dropped it on the ground. Very quickly, several people turned and looked to see where the 20-cent piece had fallen. Amongst a crowd of people, many could hear this noise that was barely audible. You know why? Because it was recognizable. It was something that they were familiar with. It was something they actually wanted to hear. They didn't want to hear the cricket, but the sound of falling money. That's different. And so the point is, people tend to hear what they want to hear. And when it comes to obedience, it's the same. We tend to only hear, and that is obey, what we want to obey, that which we believe is agreeable to us. The rest of it gets lost in the noise as we focus only on that which we feel benefits us. However, Paul reminds us that we are to be obedient to all of those things, to all of those that are above us. Romans 13 states this, whether we like it or not. Verse 1, "Let every soul or life be subject unto the higher powers. For there is no power but of God. The powers that be ordained are of God." And so, in the words of Star Trek, resistance is futile, as the Borg will say. Now, we might think we are resisting those who oppose us, but if God be for us, who can be against us? These leaders, as the scriptures say, or these rulers, whether in secular society or in the church, they were ordained by God. He sets up kings. Daniel 2:21 states that God sets up kings. It is for his purpose. If we do not obey them, could it be that this is a reflection of our obedience or disobedience to God? Verse 2, "Whosoever therefore resists the power resists the ordinance of God, and they that resist shall receive to themselves damnation. For rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. Will you then not be afraid of the power? Do that which is good, and you shall have praise of the same." And so the works we are to do in life, they're to be good, right? We are to have good works. Well, so this being the case, That is, if our works are good, what do we have to be afraid of? What do we fear? Well, we're to fear God, right? And that which God allows is not to terrorize us, but it will work for our benefit. That is, if we submit and if we obey those higher powers. And this is what we are actually here to learn on earth. We were put here on this earth to learn this very thing, that our way does not work. God's way does. However, we don't think like God, and His ways are not our ways, as the scriptures state, and so we will often presumptuously take it upon ourselves to make our own rules at times. You know, we'll look at the rules of society or the instructions of the church, and we'll put it in our own context. Say, well, that doesn't really fit my situation. I think I can improve upon that. I think I can come up with a better way. You know, if the speed limit says 45 miles per hour, we think we're just fine going 55. If we're required to pay taxes on tips to the government, we think, well, we don't have to report this petty cash, you know, this is menial, it's, you know, the government's corrupt anyway. If we are allotted 15 minutes of break at work, we will often think that, you know, 25 minutes is more appropriate. This is what we do much of the time. And this is disobedience, not just to the authorities that are above us, but I say it's disobedience to God. It reflects our disobedience to Him. And so, in verse 4, it states, "For He is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For He bears not the sword in vain, for He is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that does evil. Wherefore you must needs be subject, not only for wrath, but also for conscience sake," it says. Not just because we might get punished if we break the rules, but for conscience sake, to not sear our conscience. As long as the rules and the instructions of higher authorities, I'll make this point clear, do not violate the scriptures, do not go against the beliefs written in the book that you and I hold so dear, we are to be obedient to them, aren't we? Not only because if we don't, we might get hurt, we might get fined, we might get thrown in prison or some other kind of damage, but because if we disobey authorities, we are searing our conscience. If we find it easy to jaywalk after a period of time, we might find that cheating on our taxes isn't too difficult to do. If we continue in this, we will soon see that deceiving a coworker or our boss is okay as long as it's for our benefit. Next, a little lie here or there seems harmless to us. And before you know it, we're openly mocking God by claiming to be Christian, but disobeying His law. And so we are to practice obedience by obeying those who are above us in this life. But are we? Are we doing this today? I say many people are not. This message that I'm giving today is actually very uncomfortable for me, but not because I don't believe in it. I believe it's right. But because I too have been affected by the world in which we live. We live in a world where authority is vastly rejected by disobedience. I mean, children, it's common that children are disobedient to their parents, and this is even glorified on television. I just watched a movie the other day, which is a very cute movie. We borrowed from the Fishers, called Dan in Real Life. It's cute, but one of the things I saw over and over again was how these children talked to their father, and the father just took it like, yeah, you're right, you know, you can just disrespect me and speak to me however you wish. This is accepted today. It's widespread. It's all over the place. Also, wives are disrespectful to their husbands. And this is done in the name of feminism. It's common. It's now accepted and even expected today. Every day, the headlines include stories of those who don't feel the need to obey authority. In fact, just yesterday, I was reading a story about a teenage girl in North Carolina who was suspended for violating a school policy against and wearing nose rings to school all the time. She was warned about this time and time again, but she continued to do it. And her reason is that her and her mother, and get this, they claim they are members of the Church of Body Modifications. And apparently this is some organization they formed, you know, small, of course. Now the ACLU is now suing the school on her behalf, saying that by not allowing her to wear her nose rings, they're saying one religion is valid while another is not. You see where this is going? I mean, in other words, I can claim to be a member of the Church of Cow Dung, and I can wear cattle feces on my head to school, and you know what? You have to accept it. Not only that, you have to bear the smell, because if you don't, you'll say, be saying my religion isn't as valid as yours. Now, I'm taking a little far, but that's where we're headed. It's craziness. Disobedience to higher authorities is widespread. We're becoming a nation of disobedient, spoiled brats, if you will. We think whatever we want to do, no matter what it is, nobody can call it wrong. Nobody can call it bad anymore. We're creating a twisted environment where any evil must be accepted, and it's a result of our disobedience to higher powers. There was another case where a judge, Judge Talmadge Little John, actually his name is, asked the court to stand and say the Pledge of Allegiance before the proceedings. Now I know this is not a law, but an attorney refused to say the pledge in the courtroom. And the lawyer said this, he said, I don't have to say it because I'm an American. It seems kind of the irony in it. It's, what's going on? You see my point, to be an American today is starting to mean that you are a citizen of lawlessness. But you and I, we are not to be workers of lawlessness, of iniquity, as the scriptures say. We are to obey the laws, both of the state and those of the church. But our surroundings, I think, have influenced God's people. They have influenced the church. The church has always been a kind of microcosm of the world in which we live. And so we have now seen groups that have formed, and people are taking it upon themselves to define God's law. And so the Sabbath, for many, has become a day of lawlessness and sin. And instead of a day of freedom from sin, people have defined it to mean a day of freedom that I can go to a restaurant if I want to. I can do business on this day if I want to. Others have presumptuously rejected the holy calendar that was first given to Moses, then handed to the 70 elders, which became the Sanhedrin, and they have now made their own calendars by inferring unintended uses for the words moon, month, or Abib. They don't care that it was God that ordained this in the beginning. They think that they can now improve upon this, that it has been altered, and so now we have to step in and make it better. Now, how's that going to fly in the kingdom, do you think? It's not going to go very well, is it? You know, Uriah was a man who trusted and obeyed David. He did this at a time when David could not be trusted. He was given a letter which sealed his death. And he didn't open the letter. He did what an obedient soldier was to do, and he took it to the commander. Now, I'm not saying we should obey leaders to our death. But I'm saying the obedience to higher authorities has been, much of it's been lost over time. We don't feel like this anymore. We don't have an allegiance to God's church like we once had at one time. We don't feel with the need to be obedient to people that we disagree with when our disagreement is really not biblical. Now, because there are ministers out there that are preaching heretical doctrines, many will even refuse to tithe to any organization, and instead they'll give their tithe to pet charities or organizations of their own design. And by this, they're robbing God as he says in Malachi 3 and verse 8. He's foretold this would happen, robbing God of tithes and offerings. Now, are there wrong teachings out there? Yes. Are there ministers who teach falsely? Yes, there is. But who are we to say that I am not going to obey God's commands because I don't like the pastor? It's presumptuous. In verse 6 of Romans 13, it says, "For this cause pay you tribute also, for they are God's ministers, attending continually upon this very thing. Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." And so whether we like it or not, the government, whether we like who is in places of power or what they're doing, we're required to follow the laws, as long as they don't violate the scriptures. We're required to pay taxes, right? Not just because they say so, but because God says so, right? And so whether we like a particular church organization of our choice or not, we're actually required to tithe. We're required also to be obedient to the ministry of that organization, as long as it does not violate the scriptures. Now, I know many people are likely cringing right now at these words. And this is because, well, many people might find it easy to obey the police officer that pulls us over and say, yes, sir, and do exactly what he says. Being obedient to somebody in the church is much harder for us to do. Now, indirectly, those police officers were ordained by God, put in places of power to keep the law. God's ministers were directly ordained by God, and yet we have a harder time following their instructions than we do those of the state. Now, this isn't in every case, but I'm saying this is widely happening today. People are taking it upon themselves to try and run the church. We have a group, we've heard of a group recently where the elders are actually trying to take over the church, trying to kick the ministry out. Let's turn over to Ephesians in chapter 4. And so disobedience, it comes from not obeying a higher authority. Now, ultimately, we know that higher authority is God. But God tells us that he is represented by others that may be above us on the earth. And so we see that God the Father is greater than Christ. I mean, Jesus told us this. The Father is greater than I. And Jesus is what? He's the head of the church, right? And this is represented by what? Marriage. Just as the husband is the head of the wife and or the family. Now, oddly enough, there are some in the church today that teach against hierarchical government. But that teaching is contrary to what God's government truly is. It is hierarchical. There is God the Father. There is Christ below him, who is the husbandman, who is the head of what? The bride, as the scriptures say. The bride is the church. We see the example that the 12 apostles, each will be over one of the tribes of Israel in the kingdom. And who rules over them? David. King David will be above them. And who is over David? Well, we don't know exactly, but it's a guess that it's possible this could be Moses and Elijah, as the transfiguration might show us. But the point is that there are levels of authority in God's government. And when we disobey the biblically sound requests of the higher powers, that is, those that God has appointed, who are we going against? Ephesians in chapter 4, in verses 10 through 12, state this. Speaking of Christ, he that descended is the same also that ascended up far above all heavens, that he might fill all things. And he gave some apostles, and some prophets, and some evangelists, and some pastors and teachers. Why? For the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. And so this points out that the ministry, they have a purpose, and it's for the edifying of the church. It is for our edification. Now, are ministers perfect? No. They're human. Ministers make mistakes. Sometimes they let their ego and their pride get in the way. But this the position of authority that they have been given, it's not to be abused, obviously, just as the husband is not to abuse the authority that is given him over the wife and over the family. People make mistakes, but they have a place and they have a function, and this is ordained by God. Like Paul said, follow me as I follow Christ, right? If it's in line with the scriptures, if there's nothing wrong with it, if it doesn't offend, then you and I, we have a responsibility to be obedient to higher powers. As an example of this, we have the song leader, which is Mr. Brady today in the church service. And this position has a place of authority, doesn't it? Yes. When he says to rise and open your hymnals, we rise and open hymnals. When he says to turn over to page, I don't remember what it was today, but if he says to turn to page 31, do we turn to page 62? Because we like 62 better. We want to sing 62. No. That would be silly, right? We turn to page 31 and we sing together in unity. Some of us in harmony. It's biblically sound. It's correct. There's nothing wrong with it. It's actually right and good. We work in unity to the glorification of God. And so verse 16 says that the whole body, speaking the whole body of the church, every member of the church, fitly joined together and compacted by that which every joint supplies, according to the effectual working in the measure of every part, making the increase of the body unto the edifying of itself in love. And so this is saying it's to the edification of the whole body, not just to one, not just to one person, the whole group. Now God has set up the ministry. He has set up people in various positions of authority around the earth, and we are told to be obedient to them. And this is how we practice. This is a foundation of our purpose, is to learn to be obedient, a fundamental Christian discipline, and it, because it's a reflection of how we are going to obey God. I believe this is its purpose. God is the ultimate authority. He wants to see, what are we going to do when people of lesser positions than his give us instructions or direction or try to edify us? We're going to reject it, or are we going to accept it? Let's turn over to 1 Samuel in chapter 15. There was a strong man who was taller than everyone else in his tribe. He was handsome. He was bright. He was gifted in many ways. He's been described as a choice man and a goodly person. He was dedicated in his endeavors, and he was in the prime of his life. And you might have guessed it, I'm speaking of Saul. Saul was a man of great stature, and God chose him to be king over his people. He trusted him to do his will, and he gave him specific instructions. In verse 1 of chapter 15, Samuel also said to Saul, "The Eternal sent me to anoint you to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore listen you unto the voice of the words of the Eternal. Thus says the Eternal of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he had laid wait for him, and when he came up out of Egypt. Now go and smite Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass." So Saul gathered the people in verse 4 together, and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said to the Kenites, "Go, depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt." So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until they would come to Shur, that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag, and the best of the sheep, and of the oxen, and of the fatlings, and of the lambs, and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed. And so Saul likely felt that he wasn't doing anything wrong here. He knew what God had said, to destroy everything. And all the vile, the things that were trashy, if you will, that he destroyed. But the good sheep and the cattle, well, these could be used for good. I mean, surely God would like us to do that. I mean, look at these animals. These are prime pieces of meat here. We can use these for the benefit of the people. Well, how did God feel about Saul adding to his instructions? In verse 10, "Then came the word of the Eternal unto Samuel, saying, It repents me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me, and has not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Eternal all night." So Samuel was very upset at this. He had high hopes for Saul. But God was now sorry that he ever made Saul a king. Why? Why was this? What was it that Saul did that was so bad? Was it wrong to keep some of the choice sheep and the cattle, the lambs, to feed the people and perhaps even to make sacrifice to God? Was that such a bad thing? Verse 13, "Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be you of the Eternal. I have performed the commandment of the Eternal." Oh, really? Samuel said, "What mean then by the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?" I mean, you can hear the animals making the noise. You've done everything God asked you to do? And Saul said, "They have brought them from the Amalekites." Oh, here we go. Let's pass the buck. "For the people spared the best of the sheep of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Eternal our God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed." Then Samuel said unto Saul, "Stay here, and I will tell you what the Eternal has said to me this night." And he said unto him, "Say on." And Samuel said, "When you were little in your own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel, and the Eternal anointed you king over Israel? And the Eternal sent you on a journey and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners of the Amalekites and fight against them until they are consumed. Why did you not obey the voice of the Eternal, but did fly upon the spoil, that is, take of the spoil, and did evil in the sight of the Eternal?" And Saul said unto Samuel, "Yes, I have obeyed the voice of the Eternal, and have gone the way which the Eternal sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people, they took of the spoil, the sheep and the ox and the chief things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Eternal our God in Gilgal." And Samuel said, "Has the Eternal as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Eternal?" You can't patch it up. He delights more in the obedience to his word. Not in saying, you know what, I have a better way. I'm going to improve upon his instructions. "Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to listen than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because you have rejected the word of the Eternal, he has also rejected you from being king." And so we understand the story. Saul acted presumptuously. He felt that he could take God's instructions and he could improve upon them. This was, therefore, assuming a position of authority that was not given to Saul. It was, in fact, rebellion against God. And so I ask us to consider how many of us have done something similar. Have we taken God's word and felt that we can improve upon it and try to alter it to mean what we feel we want, something we desire? Perhaps saying, well, it doesn't apply to me in this situation. This is different. I am different. Have we taken outlines by our boss, by a professor or a teacher at school, and presumptuously tried to improve upon them by adding to or taking away? Now, I'm not trying to say that we can't suggest. I think this is a good thing to do, where we can go to the person who has given us the instructions, the teaching, try to help us, to edify us, and say, well, what about this? You know, could this apply? Or that's not necessarily a wrong thing to do. I often wonder what would have happened if Saul would have went to Samuel first and said, you know, there's a lot of good animals here. Are you sure we have to destroy all of them? You know, I know what God said, but, you know, could you inquire of God, is it okay to keep some of them? Would it be possible that Saul would have still stayed in power, at least for a time? I think it is. There's nothing wrong with that. But when specific instructions are given, that we are required to follow, right? Now, it was David who sang out, keep back thy servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then shall I be upright, and I shall be innocent from the great transgression. He calls this presumptuousness a great transgression. It's not a small thing. And so to presumptuously add or take away from God's instructions, it's a big deal. By doing this, we are basically putting our opinions above God's. Let's turn over to Deuteronomy in chapter 4. Deuteronomy in chapter 4, and verse 1. It says, now therefore listen, O Israel, unto the statutes and unto the judgments which I teach you, for to do them, that you may live and go in and possess the land which the eternal God of your fathers has given you. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish anything from it, that you may keep the commandments of the eternal your God which I command you. And so this is not a reference only to the Ten Commandments. This refers to all of the statutes and the judgments, as well as, I might include, the instructions that would come through his servants. That means those words that came from God through Moses, later through the prophets, through the ministry. They were to be followed as well. Again, as long as they fit in line with the scriptures, as long as they were biblically sound. Now consider, if our boss came to us and asked us to do a presentation on sprockets, would we take the project home and then decide, you know what, I think I'm going to include rods and bearings as well. This would really spice it up. This would make it very interesting. And then go ahead and put it together and give the presentation without his consent or her consent? No, we would never do that. Or if we did, what would happen? Well, we'd likely be fired, just as Saul was fired for not obeying the words of the Eternal. And so we are weak. We need God's instruction in our lives. We do. None of us would deny this. However, we will often question where that instruction is coming from. If we read it in the book is one thing. But many times we are corrected by who? By people around us. God has always used men and women to correct his people. He has sent prophets to his people to confirm the words that are written in this book. Now, some would say, I would never disobey a direct command from God. If God spoke to me directly, there is no way I would go against his word. Well, when God speaks to you directly, that's pretty rare that this is going to happen. Of course we're going to listen to God. If we hear a thundering voice or some supernatural voice through an angel saying, you must go this way to the right, or you must go over here, this is what I want you to do. Of course we're going to listen to that. God knows this. But what he doesn't know, what are we going to do when he's not right there standing next to us? That's why he's invisible. What are we going to do when he's not right there looking over our shoulder? Are we going to obey him? Or not? And that's why we're always to have an ear cocked, as Mr. Braddock has always told me, have an ear cocked and listen to that opposing view at times. It might be from God. We don't know. Do they have a point? Sometimes it might come from friends, brethren, family members. And sometimes it comes from positions of authority, doesn't it? From those that are above us. But that we often have a hard time with. Mankind does not like authority. We like freedom. We want to be our own authorities in life. But we were put here to overcome that, to overcome our desire to be our own authority. Lean not to your own understanding, as the scriptures say. Let's turn over to Matthew 5. And so authority figures have their God-given place. However, our human nature doesn't like these boundaries. We want to do as we please, and because of this, we need guidelines to follow. Now, these rules are outlined in the scriptures, but we often need to be reminded of these instructions. And these reminders come to us by God, many times through higher powers. And so, we're supposed to watch our speed on the highway. Pay attention to the signs that tell you how fast to go or to slow down or that there's curves coming up. Don't turn left when it says hazard zone. Do not enter. We know what's going to happen if we disobey these rules. There are lessons in life that carry much more weight than we might think. Disconnect the ground before you disconnect the red wire. It's a law, right? If we don't, what happens? Crash and burn, right? In addition to this, we often don't see what lies ahead of us in our individual lives. It can be difficult for us to know what lessons that we still need to learn in life in order to obtain the kingdom of God, to know where we stand as far as being ready to become the bride of Christ. In a book titled How Life Imitates the World series, it was author Dave Boswell who tells a story about Earl Weaver, who was the former manager of the Baltimore Orioles, and he also tells of their star player, Reggie Jackson. Now, Weaver had a rule that nobody could steal base unless they got the sign. Well, this upset Reggie Jackson because he felt that he knew the pitchers and the catchers well enough to judge when he could steal base or not. So one game, he decided to steal base without a sign. He got a good jump off the pitcher, and he ran very fast, and he slid into second base, and he was safe. He made it. Jackson got up and dusted the dirt off of his clothes, and he smiled with delight. He felt that he had vindicated his judgment. Now later, Weaver had took Jackson aside, and he explained to him why he hadn't given Jackson the steal sign and why what he did was a big mistake. First, he said, the next batter was a man named Lee May. He was the team's best power hitter other than Jackson. Now, when Jackson stole second, first base was left open. And so the other team intentionally walked May. Therefore, they took the bat right out of his hands. No home run there. Second, the following batter wasn't very strong against the pitcher at the time, and so Weaver felt that he had to send up a pinch hitter at this time to try to drive in the men on base. And that left Weaver without bench strength later in the game when he needed it. You see the problem with this? Jackson saw only his relationship to the pitcher and the catcher. Weaver, on the other hand, the coach, he was watching the whole game. He saw the big picture. Jackson made a presumptuous move, and it was not a right one. And so, in comparison to each of us, we only see a small section of our life. But God is watching the big picture. He understands what lies ahead. He knows what we need, where we lack, and also where we are strong. And when God sends us a signal, it's wise to obey that signal, no matter what we might think is a better way. When we presumptuously add or take away, God sees this as disobedience. He sees it as a sin, and this is warned against. Now, Saul thought that he was doing a good thing by keeping the prime animals. What's wrong with that, right? Uzzah was another man who likely thought that he was simply helping out by reaching forth and steadying the ark, but he acted presumptuously. How did that end up? Because we often refuse to do things the way God instructs, we have trials. We have affliction. And these are not necessarily to punish us. God is not there to terrorize us, but they are to bring us around so that we can see why our way is not the right way, so that we can learn to be faithful and obedient servants. And so adding to or taking away from the Word of God is problematic. We know this. We understand this. Sometimes we feel that it's okay to add or take away from other lesser powers of authority. But it's a reflection. I ask us to consider. In addition, there's another point that needs to be made before we end here. And I want us to understand that this does not mean that we cannot go above and beyond what is required of us. Not at all. There are occasions for us to go above and beyond what is required. It can be an expression of great zeal, of passion. Jesus instructed this in Matthew 5 and verse 40. He says, "If any man will sue you at the law and take away your coat, let him have your cloak also. And whosoever shall compel you to go a mile, go with him 2 miles." And so, there is a place for adding to what is required. That is not the point at all. But there is also a time to perform what is requested and to not take away or add to it. It's a lesson that we have to learn, a fundamental Christian discipline, as stated in the beginning, so that we will learn to not lean to our own understanding. Ultimately, that is the purpose. And so what happens to those people who are students who are told to write a term paper on chapter 4 and they say, you know what, I like chapter 5. I'm going to write a term paper on chapter 5. Is that going to go very well? No, you're going to fail, right? In the military, soldiers are trained to follow strict orders for a purpose. And what is this purpose? It's for the good of the mission, because people above them understand the big picture. They're trying to have success in the endeavor, and they're also trying to what? To save lives. What happens if soldiers don't follow orders? Missions can be jeopardized. Lives can be lost. people will get hurt. And so you and I, we also have a mission, don't we? We are referred to sometimes as Christian soldiers. We are given guidelines, we are given instructions, we are given commandments and higher powers also, so that we will learn to obey in order to fulfill our quest. And we practice following directions today so that we can follow directions in the kingdom of God. Now, if we make it into the first resurrection and God comes to us and says, you know, Terry, I want you to go down to Africa and I want you to rebuild this city and I want you to do it in such and such a way and gives us the outlines of what's supposed to take place, what happens? Am I going to go down there and say, you know, I know God said this, but I have a better way? How about if I build the houses over here instead and put the people's, you know, place of worship here? I mean, that's not going to happen, right? No. I wouldn't even be in that position if that's how I thought, because God is weeding out right now. God is seeing who will obey him and who will not. He's finding out. Those people won't even be put in that position, because he will know, this person will obey me. This person I'm not so sure about. And that's why we are here. We're here to learn and to practice so that God will come to know who is going to be faithful, and also who to come to know who might think that they have a better way. And so I ask us, and I ask myself, to be faithful, to be obedient in all things, to not commit the sin of presumptuousness by disobeying God, and in this also by disregarding the biblically sound instructions of higher powers.